God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name, and you do have the ability to unmute yourself right now. Anybody? All righty, last call. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous states that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So normally in this group, we are an open big book step study. We basically go through the steps using paragraphs out of the big book, and we have a panel of two speakers each week. And it takes us 13 weeks to go through all 12 steps. So we'll start with step one next week, and we'll have two invited speakers. But after we go through all 12 steps, we have a special event, and we call it Supper and a Speaker, and we usually have a big potluck, and we ask somebody to come in and share their story. And so tonight, you guys are all in for a treat. You already know that. but Sammy is just a fan favorite. She's been so generous to me personally and to our group. You've come down and shared many times and did that weekend workshop with Christy that weekend. It was lovely. And one weird thing that happens is we record all our meetings and we put them on our website. And whenever Sammy shares, we find some way to screw up the recording. So we'll find out how we're going to screw that up tonight, but it looks like it's recording. I think we're in good shape. Sammy, I love you with all my heart. You are as fine an example of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous and love and open-heartedness and kindness, and I'm just thrilled to be with you tonight, and I don't want to take up another second of your time. I love you, dear.
I love you, too. Thank you so much, David, for asking me to come share my strength of an experience, and I have to tell y'all, there's a lot of people on here tonight that are just a lot of my AA heroes, and I love every one of you. I am so grateful for y'all. And I truly, truly owe my sobriety to God, to my sponsor, and to you. Grateful, grateful, grateful. My sobriety date is September 1st, 1989. I have a sponsor. I have a sponsor who loved me enough until I could learn to love you. I have a God of my understanding, and I have a home group. My home group is the Keystone Group. It's on Sundays at 5 o'clock, and we are definitely Zoom. So if anybody's interested, I will definitely give you that link. We really are a jolly group, that's for sure. We are serious, but we don't take ourselves so seriously. Let's see, my job tonight is, someone told me I had to be funny. That was a job. My job tonight is to tell you what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. And I can tell you this right now, if you're new here, I have some great news for y'all. You never have to do this again. You know, all you have to do is come in and just change everything about you. You know, everything. And that's how I got here. I got here because I was sick of me. I was really at the end of me. But let me tell y'all about a little of my past so I can give y'all some identification. I was born to a nice Jewish family. I was the youngest of six. The only thing I can remember as a child is fear. I was a fearful kid. I don't know where that came from, but fear ruled my life. All my sisters and brothers, they're all doctors and lawyers today because we're Jewish. That's what they're supposed to be. And I was the only one that didn't go to college. My career was alcoholism. And I did really well on that. If you could have put a grade on it, I would have made the grade. So my sisters and brothers, I compared myself to them all the time. You know, I wanted it. I don't know what it was, but they had it and I didn't have it. And I tried very, very hard and long to get what they had. And it almost killed me. I lived in fear, and I'll have to tell y'all now, if you live in fear, you're never yourself. I grew up always wanting to be you. I never wanted to be me. And I would have done anything not to be me. I was just I felt inadequate. I just had just a hard time growing up, you know? And a lot of it was because I just kept comparing myself to my sisters and brothers and the people around me. So at the age of 15, I took my first drink. It wasn't anything exciting. My girlfriend and I was brought up in Norfolk. We took a bus to Richmond, Virginia, and we got a place and I got a bottle of vodka and didn't even get a glass or no ice or umbrellas or cherries or anything. We just opened the top and just went at it. And I just passed out. That was my first experience with drinking. And now I have to tell you, I did take some drinks when it came to the high holidays. Jews usually drink Manischewitz wine. And I will tell you, it is the most disgusting thing I've ever drank. It's not good going down and it's really not good coming back up. But Manischewitz wine was a lot in my family. No one else in my family's an alcoholic. You know, I was I finally got to do something on my own with them. So that was the last thing. But I have to tell you, the first time I really took a drink and remember it when I was 15 is I drank alcoholically from the very beginning. And I didn't know that. I had shame because I didn't see anybody else drinking like I drank around. I had guilt because I didn't see anybody around, you know, and I was a sneak. I was a closet drinker from the very beginning because I just didn't want anybody to see how much I drank. So also at the age of 15, all my sisters and brothers looked like Jewish refugees. They were all really skinny and I was the only fat kid. So my mom took me to this thing called a diet doctor. And in the 60s, I was born in 1951, let's get that cleared up. So in the 60s, my mom, when I was 15, took me to this diet doctor and they were a dime a dozen back in the 60s. And they put me on these things called amphetamines and they were yummy. I love them. And I wish I could still take them in a way, but you can't. That started me off. I mean, I just was on a roll at that point. I remember when I was younger that I would have to drink before I went out with my friends just so I could feel equal to them because I never felt enough. So I always had to drink before. And then when everybody left, I would finish the job. I graduated high school. I don't really know how because I really didn't do well in school. At the age of 18, I moved away from home and I moved up from Norfolk to Washington, D.C. It's like I had arrived. And that's when my drinking started taking off. I worked at Washington Hospital Center. Then I worked at Walter Reed and then I went over to NIH. And work started getting to be a problem for me in my drinking. So it's just like everybody says, I would go to work on you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and by Friday, I was raring to go. And I would be drinking, you know, Saturday, Sunday. And then the same thing happened to me, like it says in the big book. I, you know, would come to work on Tuesday morning. Well, what happened to Monday? I couldn't make it. And it started getting to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I was just having a hard time at work and people were getting mad at me. And so everybody in my family got married at the age of 21, because back then that you were considered like an old maid. So I, at the age of 23, you know, being a little different, because I never really wanted to do that. At the age of 23, I thought, well, my life is getting a little out of control. I need to do something. So I decided I needed to get married. So I picked out this perfect specimen. I picked out a nice Jewish doctor. And for a couple of reasons. One, he could write prescriptions. Cha-ching. Two, you know, he would be married to his profession and he wouldn't like be worried about me. And three, my family would love me. Oh my God, she's marrying a Jewish doctor. It's going to be awesome. Well, on November 9th of 1974, my parents threw this huge Jewish wedding. And that morning before I got married, I got thirsty. I don't know why I got thirsty, but I got thirsty. You know, I needed something. So I called up one of my girlfriends and I said, hey, let's just go for a drink. And so we go for a drink and I drank a fifth of vodka that day and took four Quaaludes. I would have married anybody that was beside me. But here's the sad part about this whole story. I was only married for 3 weeks. And I have a good reason for me. This is tells a lot about the life of Sammy. I saw another guy go by that I wanted, you know, and I know I got bored easily, but that was a little bit too fast. But, you know, I just wanted him. I didn't want him anymore. And so what I did to get out of that, because God knows I don't like being wrong or looking bad. So what I did to get out of that is I lied about him. The lie was so horrendous that my family was glad I got rid of him. And none of that was true. None of it. And I was at 23 years old and I didn't get sober till I was 38. So I got a lot of stories like that. But so I go on my merry way and, you know, that guy that I left him for, you know, that lasted 3 months, because that's as long as a lot of my relationships lasted. Because I was the type that really couldn't stand being around people when I drank. I was really one of those closet drinkers. So at the age, I was working up at NIH at the time, and at the age of 28, I got stricken with multiple sclerosis. And what I did with that is I got real sick. I lost my eyesight and was in a wheelchair for like a year. And what I did for that is I turned to alcohol for my solution for that. They had put me on disability and I hated it. I really hated it, but drink got me through. Drink became my solution and not a problem. That was my solution. Drink was also making all my decisions for me at that time. So a year goes by and I get out of the wheelchair and now, you know, I get my eyesight back and I'm like, now I'm on this geographical cure because I'm footloose and fancy free. I can go anywhere. I have lived in so many different cities. And the reason for that is because I was the type of alcoholic that would just stir up trouble. I always got in trouble with people. I would just lie to you, steal from you, you know, drink everything in your house. So I was just roaming around. You know, I joke about this, but I was roaming around the country. I was a wandering Jew, just going from place to place. So I get this phone call from my mom and I'm in Memphis, Tennessee at the time. And I'd gotten locked up there for drunk in public. And but my mom said my dad got sick and my dad got sick from this thing called mesothelioma. And this was over 40 years ago. And so my mom flew my dad out to MD Anderson because they had a protocol there. And my mom was there for a little while and she needed some help. So she called all her children, you know, and wanted somebody to come help her so she could take a break. Well, you know, all my sisters and brothers had jobs. They had children. They were married. They had these professions, you know, they had this thing called a life, you know, what they were living. So I volunteer because I really wanted to be that good sister and that good daughter. I really did want to be a good person. I really did. So I go down there to help my mom out and I send my mom back to Norfolk. And I go in my dad's room, who I loved my dad with all my heart and soul. He was my hero. And I knew my dad loved me too. And I go there and, you know, my dad's aphasic. He can't even speak because he had had a heart attack. And I go in there and I got thirsty. I don't know why I got thirsty, but I get thirsty again. And so I go into his room and I look at him and I go, "Dad, I'll be right back." And I go out to have that one drink. That one drink I see other people taking with impunity. I needed that ease and comfort, you know? So I go out to have that one drink and I don't go back for 5 days. And I go back to my dad's room and he gives me that look like, "What are you doing? Where have you been? You're supposed to be here with me," you know, and I don't know what to do with that. I can't take that, you know? And so what do I do? Because I have a solution for that. I go have a drink and then I don't go back for 2 more days. And when I get back to the room, the nurse stops me and she goes, "Sammy, we're calling your family in because your dad's dying." And I'm like, "Oh my God, my family cannot see the condition my condition's in." And so I just leave in the middle of the night. I don't say goodbye to my dad. I don't do anything because I'm so fearful of my family, of what they're going to see. I'm so afraid of my sisters and brothers. And my dad died and I didn't even get to say goodbye to him. That's alcoholism. That's when alcohol makes all your decisions for you. Because I couldn't even stop to be the good daughter or the one. I loved my dad. So I go back to Norfolk to the funeral and I show up drunk. And, you know, my sister pulls me over and she grabs me with her arm and she spits on me and she says, "We don't want you here." You know, and I've got this alcoholic attitude, like I can do whatever I want to do. And I did. I stayed and I wanted to stay to help my mom out. Because my dad just lost her husband, you know? But did I care? No. What I did is I stayed behind and I just drank my mother's liquor cabinet out. I was out every single night. She didn't know where I was, you know? And I think about that now, and I've said this before, that my husband just died 6 months ago. And the pain of that and how I treated my mom, when I think about that today, it just breaks my heart, because my mom didn't even know if I was dead or alive and she had to worry about her daughter. So I did the same thing to my mom. I leave her, end up in Florida. And that's where I ended up in Florida and things weren't good down there. I lived there. I don't know how long I lived there, but I got in so much trouble. And so I had to come back. And on my way back, because I knew my mom would always take me back, I could go back to mom's, because I ended up at her house a lot. And so I'm on my way back from Florida and I don't go to Norfolk. I come to Richmond, Virginia, and that's how I got here. And I'm in Richmond and I go to my sister's. And a lot of y'all, if you're from Richmond, you know that there was a place called Poor Richard's on First and Carey. And my sister owned that beautiful restaurant. And I started working for her as a bartender. Now, I have to tell y'all, I had never been a bartender before. And my sister was a full-blown crystal meth addict. And I thought it was going to be a blast that was going to last. Well, it was not. But what happened was I started having blackouts, and I was doing that stuff called crystal meth and drinking every day. So I was becoming kind of psychotic and neurotic, and I was starting to pick things out of the air and saving them for later. I was seeing things, and I was coming in and out of blackouts all the time, and I would be up at the bar serving someone, and I would be, you know, they started yelling at me, and I'm like, whoa, I was just coming out of a blackout going, look, I just got here myself. You know, I could not get it together. I was starting having blackouts for like a week at a time. And I ended up helping my sister lose that restaurant. And at this time, and I have to tell you, because I was drinking every single day. The blackouts were lasting longer and longer. I'm starting to not make sense about anything that I was talking about. I was starting to have some alcoholic seizures. And she loses that restaurant, and I go on. And at this time, that was the last time that I had talked with my family. And I'll get into that. What happened was, I left there and I started working at this other bar, and this is where my bottom takes place. But someone had been stealing from my boss, and so we put up cameras because he wanted to catch the thief, but he didn't tell me he put up cameras. And so I come in on a Friday, and I had to work at night because I couldn't stand the sunlight. I think I was allergic to the sun. So I go in there, and he calls me into his office, and he puts in this tape. It's a VCR, guys. It was in the 80s. So he puts in the VCR tape in, and he catches me stealing on tape, and I denied it was me. And the big book talks about how we can't differentiate the truth from the false. And that was so me. I thought I was so invincible that I could do anything and nobody could see me doing anything. So this was at my bottom. He looks right at me and he said, Sammy, you are so sick. You need help, you know? And I got this alcoholic, you know, attitude again. I'm just going to take my poker chips and move to another table. So I get in my car, and this is the condition I was in at this was at the end. I wore a headband, and I wore a headband for maybe 40 years, and my sponsor made me take it off when I got sober, and I had an indentation in my forehead like this thick, and I had flowers in my hair because I was a hippie, and my flowers were dead, but they were still in my hair. I wore this long red shirt, which I wore into sobriety too. It was the only thing that I had to put on. I could not take a bath. Bathing was way too hard. It had gotten so hard for me. And so that was my condition I was in. I get into this car, and my car was in the same condition I was. It was trashed, you know, and hadn't seen oil or tire. I'm really good at changing tires because those were the $10 tires that, you know, I had to keep buying. And I go back to this apartment, which I was never self-supporting because I was put on disability from the MS. So they were taking care of that apartment, and I still didn't have a penny. And I go into this apartment that was just as trashed as I was too. I was one of those people who was so shameful. I had to take my bottles way over another place because I didn't want anybody to see how much I drank and what I did. And by this time, I have to mention that I had been putting a needle up my arm probably 100 times a day. I was addicted to that too. And so I get home and I don't drink. I don't drug. I don't do anything. I just fell asleep. And I came to the next morning and something happened to me. I couldn't tell you then what it was at all, but I knew something had happened to me. I know today that it was the hand of God that had touched me. In the big book, it says what seemed at first a flimsy reed turns out to be the loving and powerful hand of God. And God had touched me. And I picked up the phone And it wasn't my phone. I have skills. I had spliced it with my neighbor's phone. And I have wonderful skills. And when I got sober, my sponsor said, "Sammy, those aren't skills. Those are character defects." And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't know." So I called my girlfriend who had gotten help somehow. And I called her and she goes, "Sammy, don't move. I'll be right over." And she came right over. It's the first person in 5 years that I had let into my apartment. 5 years since I had had a friend. 5 years since I had, at that time, since I talked to my family. And she came and picked me up and she goes, "Sammy, I'm going to take you to treatment." And I said, "Okay. I don't even know why I'm going to treatment. I didn't even know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what was wrong with me. What I thought was wrong was I was mentally ill. I would catch myself, just like in the big book says, I would catch a glimpse of myself in the mirror and I thought I saw the devil himself. I did. And so she picks me up and she takes me to treatment. And like I said, I don't know why I'm going to treatment. I went to Tucker's up at Chippenham. I'm a recovered Tuckered nut. And so I went to treatment and there was probably around 28 to 30 people there. And I will tell you, I was probably the most obnoxious person you ever want to meet because I was so happy to be there. For me, it wasn't about the drink or the drug anymore. It was about, I was sick of Sammy. I didn't want Sam anymore. I didn't know how to be anything else. I just didn't know what to do with myself. So in treatment, I learned a lot. The first thing I learned and got from treatment is it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was very grateful because I had a counselor who really believed in the power of God, believed in the power of the fellowship, and believed in the power of AA. And so I learned up there with all these other people in treatment. They told me that I was like, "I don't want to ever drink again." They said, "Sammy, it's one day at a time, you know." And I'm like, "Whatever, I'm never drinking again, you know." And all of a sudden, I felt like I'm the chosen one. You know, I've never been a good Jew. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm the chosen one, you know, like I'm the one who's going to make it. And they told me, "Sammy, I want you to look to your left and I want you to look to your right because only one of y'all are going to make it." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I feel so sorry for you. I feel so sorry for you," because I knew I was the one. So they told me up in treatment that I had to get a sponsor. They told me the best 6 words you could ever, ever hear in Alcoholics Anonymous: trust God, clean house, and help others. That was the meat and potatoes of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they told me I had to get a sponsor. They told me I had to get a sponsor within a week. So on the 7th day, I went down to, it was a big meeting back in 89. It was Saturday Night Live. It was in the cafeteria. It was huge. And I go in there and I ran up to this woman on the 7th day and I said, "Would you be my sponsor?" And then I ran away because I was so afraid of rejection. And she comes up to me and she hands me this piece of paper with her name on it. This always makes me a little emotional. And she hands me that piece of paper and she looks me right in the eye. And she goes, "I want you to use this." And for the first time in my life, I felt like someone cared, really cared. What that woman did is she handed me the keys to the kingdom. That woman is still my sponsor today, and I say that proudly because I have kept her sober for over 31 years. And if you're a sponsor, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So that was the start of my journey. When I got out of treatment, I got to live with my sponsor. She opened up her doors for me. Here's this woman. She doesn't even know me. I didn't think she knew me, but we do know each other. And she opened up her house to me. And she doesn't like to give me all that credit because she gives God, the good Lord, all the credit. But I really am so grateful for her. I am so grateful for her. What she did with this alcoholic is what I did is I grabbed onto her shirt tail. If you're new here, grab onto somebody. Do what they do. You know, I remember people saying like, man, you seem like you got brainwashed. Well, maybe my brain needed washing. You know, I just grabbed onto her and did what she did. And what that woman did with me, for me, whatever word you want to use, is she walked me through the steps. The job that she knew that she had was to take me through and to guide me through the most spiritual part. She guided me through everything. My sponsor believed in the word God. She didn't believe in anything else. And I'll have to tell you, being Jewish, that was tough because Jews don't say the word God. We don't write it. And I'm like, it's stuck right here. Like, have you ever had something right here that you couldn't say and it hurt? It hurt. And I was like, oh gosh, oh my gosh, my family's going to think I'm Jesus lovers. I don't know what they're going to think, but. So she didn't care. She said, Sammy, this is the way we're going to start. You're going to start praying from the very beginning. And I'm so grateful for that because everything that came out of my mouth, because I wanted what y'all had so bad. I didn't want to live my life anymore. I really wanted to be reborn. I really did. I wanted to throw everything away and start all over. And so what she did is she sat me down and we read the big book. She read it to me because for some reason I was incapable of reading. It's like all my reading skills had evaporated. And she read page by page, line by line, chapter by chapter. And what we did is we did what the big book says to do. If it said write, we wrote. And I say the word we because you never have to do this alone. She took my hand and I walked side by side with her. And what this woman also did for me is besides gave me the ability really to be able to go into this room and talk to God as if I'm talking to you. I thought it was the most ridiculous thing to do in the whole world, but I did it anyhow. I didn't have a problem with step one whatsoever. I knew my life was unmanageable. I didn't get the powerless part. It was just way over my head. I didn't understand that you could be actually powerless over a liquid. You know, I just thought y'all were a little bit too much. But like it says on page 30 of the big book, I really did come to believe. And really, from to concede to my innermost self, that I was an alcoholic. And the key word there for me was I had to learn to concede to my innermost self because the word is learned. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. They say that that knowledge won't, you know, won't keep you sober, but it did. It was a component for me, my strength, hope, and experience. And knowledge and experience is really big for me because I had to learn a lot about what my disease was and what it looked like. And so for me, step one, you know, my sponsor didn't believe in getting stuck anywhere. She says, you know, there's only two movements. You're either moving forward or you're moving backwards. And I certainly didn't want to go backwards. So came to believe was a big one for me. That's a really great story of mine because it was an inner struggle for me. At first, I didn't really talk about it. What I did is I just would go to everybody and go, how do you pray? What do you do? I wanted it so bad. Just like from my sisters and brothers, whatever they had, I wanted it too. And I didn't have it. And I know today that it is God. May you find him now. And so when I came to believe, I wanted that I didn't want it to be up here. I wanted it to be in my heart. I heard a speaker say one time, it wasn't from here to from my head to my heart. It was from my heart to my head. Because deep down inside every woman and child is that fundamental idea of God. And so from my heart had to enlarge. My heart had to open up in order for me to receive those intuitive thoughts. And so that was my journey. I didn't get stuck on anything. I wasn't excited about step four because I didn't like to see the truth about me. I didn't want to know that I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and I didn't fearful. I I didn't like that at all. But I saw the truth about Sammy. I took some big chunks of truth about me. And I want to get to step nine, because I really think that that step, I can't say it's my favorite. I say everyone is. When I get to that chapter in the big book, I'll go, oh my God, that's my favorite. Oh, they're all my favorite. But my sponsor really believed in this step. She really believed in me paying back money that I owed. And this is from the very beginning. I owed a lot of money. And so I had to pay back the guy that owned the restaurant that I was stealing from. And I couldn't get a checking account or credit card because I was a code 6 at banks, because they don't like bounce checks or forgery or things like that. So I couldn't get anything like that. So I had to get money orders. And so I started sending money orders to my boss, and I didn't put anything except for the money, because that's what my sponsor said, Sammy, they just want their money. And so I was sending them to him. And then after 2 years of sending him, he called me up and he goes, would you come work for me again? And so I started working for him. I started working as a dishwasher, which was not easy for me to do. But I did. I mean, I was, you know, my first jobs were really great when I think about it. My sponsor said, Sammy, I'm not asking you to get a career. I'm asking you to get a job, you know, a J-O-B. So I got a job, and I started paying Mike back. And after 2 years, like I said, he called me and I started working for him. And after 11 years, I owned that restaurant. My husband and I got that restaurant. I had come full circle. And I'm not telling y'all that if you make amends, you're going to own a restaurant. That's not how it's going to work. But I will tell you, I have learned this from Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned this from all the spiritual readings. If I just put one foot in front of me, and that's all I have to do, suit up and show up. That's all I have to do. If I straighten out spiritually, everything emotionally and physically is going to follow behind, you know, and that's what I kept doing. I hadn't talked to my family in years, and my sponsor wanted me to write my mom, at least get my relationship back with my mom. So I wrote to my mom, and she didn't write back to me until 2 years later. My sisters and brothers refused to talk to me, and it killed me. When I was working at that restaurant that I was stealing from, I got a typed letter from them. And in that typed letter, what the Jewish religion does is they take their sleeve and they rip it, and they killed me off. And I was considered no longer a member of my family. And it killed me. It killed my heart. And I did the same thing with that letter, what I did with everything. I threw that away. I threw people away. I threw my bills away. You know, I threw everything away. I just gave it up freely is what I did. You know, I had lost everything, including the power of choice to drink. So my sponsor started making me write to my mom. I did. I got my relationship back with her. It was slow, but it was wonderful. And I'm going to tell you all a few stories. My mom wanted to meet me after 2 years. And I was like, oh my God, this is so good. But I was scared. Now I hadn't seen her like in 5-7 years. And so I go to my sponsor, and I was going to meet her in DC, and I go to my sponsor and I said, June, I've got to borrow someone's Mercedes. And she goes, no, you'll drive what you have. And I went, no, I can't do that. You know, my car was a $200 car. It had AA stickers all over it inside. And I said, you don't understand. I'm Jewish. I've got to borrow someone's Mercedes. And she goes, no, you're just going to drive what you got. And so I ended up driving my car up to meet my mom, and everything went well. You know, I don't even remember what happened, but it wasn't even an issue. And I tell you this for a reason. 11 years later, my oldest brother calls me and he said, Sammy, I think it's about time we meet to get together. And I said, you bet. And if it had been years prior, I would have gone, no way. Where were you when I needed you? But see, I realized, and this happens to a lot of us in AA, I realized that it wasn't in my time, it was in God's time. God had to heal my heart. My heart has been healed. I don't have any hate. And I had nothing but hate in my heart before. I had no such thing as called forgiveness. I didn't even know how to do that. But 11 years later, I'm like, you bet. And I got to meet with my brother, and I say I met with him because for the first time, because as a kid, I was a fearful kid. So I never really knew who he was. I didn't even know myself. So my mom has this birthday party, and she had turned 90 years old, and I was 18 years sober. And I now, at this time, I'm sponsoring a lot of women. I've been doing prison work for 16 years at that time. You know, I make coffee. I'm doing everything that I can for Alcoholics Anonymous because that is my passion. And I go and I'm scared to death. And I'm speaking with a guy named Jack Quarterman. He's passed away now. And I'm fearful because I get invited to my mom's birthday party and I haven't seen my family in 25 years. 25 years. And I'm scared to death. And Jack Quarterman looks at me and he goes, Sammy, all you need to do is suit up and show up. God's already taken care of it for you. So I show up to Florida and to my mom's 90th birthday party. And, you know, I walk in and I know I look good. You know, I'm sober. And did any of them talk to me? No. They did not talk to me. But I was there for my mom. And when I left there for the first time in my life, in that family life, I felt like I was good enough. I didn't have to crawl before anyone. I'm God's kids. And what I learned from that, it's the same thing about driving that car. I learned right then and there is what I have is good enough and who I am is good enough. I mean, these lessons that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous have been major for me. They've been heartbreaking. They've been joyous. You know, everything I've learned today that I know today has been from Alcoholics Anonymous and from good sponsorship and people like you. Today, I say I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. I don't know what else I would be. I would still be out there wandering around, senseless. I mean, my alcoholism gave me the best gift. So what happened is I come back and I'm living in Richmond, Virginia. I'm married, which is an amazing thing. I was married for 24 years, but I married a guy who believed in God, who believed in Alcoholics Anonymous, who believed in the fellowship. And we got to travel this road together. And he just passed away, but he was such an inspiration to me. I will tell you that I'm not saying that we were the best of anything, but I will tell you, I have been such a very fortunate, grateful woman to have had him in my life. I mean, I learned a lot from him. But today in my life, this COVID thing has stopped me, but I was doing a lot of prison work. I had been going to prison for 28 years. I don't know if that kept me sober, but I'm not going to stop it. I don't know if making cakes for my home group, you know, is going to keep me sober, but I'm not going to stop doing that. I don't know if the meetings I go to have kept me sober, but I'm not going to stop doing that either. Not sponsoring other people. I sponsor a lot of women, and I say this not because I'm great, it's because I'm available. God sees fit to put people in my life, and no matter how much time I think that, oh my gosh, another, God provides. God has provided for me since day one. My sponsor taught me this that I like to share too, and she taught me this a long time ago, and it's on page 29 of the big book. I'll just tell you all that. But there's a paragraph in there because this is how I came in. It said that if I, You know, I would be frantic about things and my sponsor would say, Sammy, just set that aside. To set my emotions, my ideas, and my attitude to one side. So a new set of conceptions can come in and motivate me. And every time she said that, I went, you bet, I can do that. I can do that. Another thing she said to me every day, God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? And for me, the reason that line is so important for me, what is your choice to be? Because see, fear is a choice for me. I can choose God or I can choose fear. And I choose God today. I lived in that fear and I'll do anything I can to not go back to where I came from. I like to end this with a story that my husband ended with. And it goes something like this. There was a guy named Saul, and Saul was a really bad man. You know, he was a tax collector. He was just not a good guy. And on his way to Damascus, God knocked him off his horse. Boom, just, you know, in fact, became blind. And gave him a transformation, just like we get, a transformation. And Saul became Paul. And Paul loved God, and God loved Paul. He was the apple of his eye. And he loved God so much that, but Paul had a problem. Paul had this thorn in his side, and it doesn't say really what the thorn is. But he asked God three times to remove that thorn. And God said each time, my grace is sufficient to pull you through. Alcoholism may be a thorn in my side, but God's grace is sufficient to pull me through. Thank you so much for having me share tonight.
Oh, thank you, Sammy. I'm going to allow everyone to unmute and thank Sammy while I try to collect myself.
Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you, Sammy.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for being here. Thanks, Sammy. Love you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sammy.
Thank you. That was amazing.
Thanks, Sammy.
Thanks, Sammy.
Thank you so much, Sammy.
Thank you, Sammy. That was wonderful.
Guys. I love you all.
I hope you have stock in Kleenex because I used a bunch.
Totally relate.
Love you, Sammy.
Wow.
Love you, Sammy.
Love you, too, Sammy. Said it better. Bob, thank you all for being here for me always.
Oh, yeah. thank you so much.
Love you.
I'm going to take the meeting back for the moment. We'll have another opportunity after the Lord's Prayer to unmute and chat. And thanks, Sammy, again. The seventh tradition, I placed a link in the chat. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure, and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I will take one or two announcements by show of hands. Anybody? Aaliyah.
Good evening, family. My name is Aaliyah and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Aaliyah.
If anyone uses Cash App or knows of any groups that use Cash App to serve as their seventh tradition, or if you personally use Cash App, Cash App has recently been hacked, and it might be wise to unlink your Cash App accounts, either the home group that collects it as a seventh tradition, or you personally as a user. Once again, Cash App has been hacked. So if you use it personally, or if you know of any groups that use it for their seventh tradition, you might want to unlink that or let that home group know of the current situation in which Cash App has been hacked. So thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Aaliyah. Was that Cash App?
Yes.
Yeah. any other announcements? Awesome. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, we'll be here hanging out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. And I want to thank everybody who participated tonight. Thank you so much again, Sammy. I love you so much. After the Lord's Prayer, we'll have an opportunity to say thank you to her again. And I wonder if I could get BJ to read the last, technically, three paragraphs on page 164.
Yeah, love to. Thank you. My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much, Sammy. As always, I can hear the love in your message. Appreciate it. This is taken from A Vision for You from the Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, BJ. Malcolm, I see your hand. Do you have an announcement? Okay. All right. Let's virtually circle up and hold hands and hug and maybe say the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you all. Sammy, I love you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you so much, Sammy. That was awesome.
Unmute yourself.
Hopefully David got it this time.
Thank you, Sammy.
That was fantastic. Thank you, Sammy. That was so great. It's good to see you as always.
As always, thank you so much. For-